Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've also launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. We live in a world which is an illusion. Our coincidences, difficult challenges, and synchronous events, which drastically change the course of our life, all appear to be random acts, but they are not. What we consider to be good or bad luck are no more an act of fate than a well-designed football play. Nothing happens by chance. All the major events in our lives are not only planned, they're planned by us before we are even born. We do this as part of our pre-life planning process. An orchestra would never consider going into a concert without a specific plan on what it is going to play and how to play it. Life is no different, and much more important. The spiritual realm has complete control over this earth and leaves little to chance. Before birth, we plan our life with our spirit guides, and we create soul contracts with our loved ones in order to ensure we have the experiences we need during our life. Our show today is titled Pre-Life Planning, and our guest is Robert Schwartz, author of Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, two books that I highly recommend. Robert Schwartz is a certified hypnotherapist who offers spiritual guidance and hypnotherapeutic regressions to help people understand their life plans. He works with mediums and psychics who are able to open the Akashic records of his clients and actually relives with them some of their pre-life planning activities. Robert Schwartz. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Hey, it's great to have you here. As I mentioned in my intro, I read both of your books and enjoyed them immensely. Tell me, why did you write, which was, I believe, the first one, Your Soul's Plan? What was your motivation for that?
Well, let me just say first, Dave, my website is www.yoursoulsplan.com. And for your listeners who are interested, they can read large excerpts of both books for free on the website. But to answer your question, you know, that for me, the path to writing first Your Soul's Plan and then Your Soul's Gift started back in Chicago in mid-2003. And at that time, I was actually self-employed as a marketing communications consultant, basically doing different forms of corporate writing. I found this work to be deeply, deeply unfulfilling. You know, I used to say to people at the time that I had the feeling that if I fell off the face of the earth, none of my clients would even know that I was gone. They would just plug somebody else into my role and carry right along. But at the same time, I had the sense that there was another purpose, another calling for my life. I wasn't sure what it was. I wasn't even sure how to figure out what it was. And so I tried different things to figure it out. None of them really shed any light on the matter. And then finally, I did something that for me at that time was a first. On May 7th of 2003, I had my first session ever with a psychic medium. Now, mediumship is not part of my background. I come from a very conventional background. But I wasn't getting anywhere through conventional attempts, and I thought, well, why not talk to a medium for an hour? No harm can come from it, and we'll see if maybe some good does. So I had this session, and the medium begins by introducing me to the concept of spirit guides, which you referred to in your introduction. I didn't even know what a spirit guide was. She explained that a guide is a highly evolved non-physical being with whom we plan our lives before we're born, and who then guide us through our lives after we come into body. And through this particular medium, I was actually able to talk with my guides. Now, they said a lot of amazing things to me in that session, one of which was, they said, you planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born. And I will tell you, Dave, I just shook my head and I said, why in the world did I do that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth. So we went on and we talked about what my challenges had been. They knew about them without me even saying anything about it. They knew everything about me. And they were able to explain in detail and quite clearly why I had actually wanted, before I was born, to have these very difficult experiences. Now, in the days and weeks after that session, I thought about this information constantly. And the effect that it had for me was one of deep healing, because it allowed me to review the course of my life and for the first time in many instances, see a deeper meaning or a deeper purpose to my greatest challenges. For me, that was deeply healing. I realized I was onto a concept that could bring a similar kind of healing to other people. And it was at that point that I first started to think about writing a book about it. And then what flowed from there was an amazing series of synchronicities in which I came into contact with several gifted mediums and channels who in one way or another can find out what somebody planned before they were born. So we embarked upon this great collaboration, which turned into Your Soul's Plan and later Your Soul's Gift.
The you're a hypnotherapist, but when people come in and and do this work, they're not hypnotized. They go through this medium. How does that work? How do you interface with your clients?
So let me explain the chronology here. At the time that I became interested in writing a book about how we plan our lives before we're born, I didn't realize that there is a form of hypnosis referred to as a life between life, or I call it a between life soul regression, in which the client can find out directly through firsthand experience what they planned. I didn't even know about that. So that was why I chose to research people's pre-birth plans with the assistance of mediums and channels. Now, after Your Soul's Plan came out at the beginning of 2007, I started receiving emails from people all over the world saying, I want you to tell me what I planned before I was born. And for some period of time, I responded to each of those emails in exactly the same way. I said, you know, I'm not a medium or a channel. I don't know what you planned before you were born. You should work with one of the mediums in my book. But then I discovered life between life regressions, studied that, took the training for that. At this point, I've done hundreds of them. What happens in a life between lives or a between lives soul regression is that we begin with a relatively short past life regression, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. But instead of the session ending at that point, as it usually would in a standard past life regression, we keep going. So the client's consciousness leaves the body in the final scene of the past life, transitions back to the non-physical realm, which I know sounds a bit ominous, but it's actually very safe, gentle, and easy. Most people have already done it hundreds of times. When they get there, they're generally greeted by a spirit guide. We ask the guide to explain why they were shown that particular past life and how it's related to the plan for the current lifetime. And then we ask their guide to escort them to what is called the Council of Elders. The council consists of the very wise, loving, and highly evolved beings who oversee reincarnation on Earth. They know everything about the client, not just the plan for the current lifetime, but every past life they've had previously. So when somebody gets in front of the council, that is potentially a transformative experience because the council can answer literally any question that's put to them, and it allows the client again to find out what they planned, why they made those plans, how they're doing in terms of fulfilling the plan, and how they can go about fulfilling it more easily, more gently, with less suffering.
Okay, so let's get into a little bit about this, the pre-life planning process. Let's start out with how extensive and detailed would a pre-life plan be?
You know, David, it varies from person to person. Some people choose to leave the plan relatively open. For example, very young souls who have not incarnated on Earth before, or perhaps have had just a handful of incarnations, they're essentially coming to hang out, so to speak. They're trying out life on the physical plane, and they might choose not to plan too much in terms of detail into the upcoming life. They're simply here to experience what it's like to be in a body on the physical plane. Now, there are other souls who make extremely detailed plans, and this, I would say, at least in my experience, is more common than leaving the plan open. People will plan to rendezvous with other members of their soul group. They'll plan out all their significant relationships, the friends they're going to have, the romantic partners. They choose their parents. They choose their future children, their friendships, enemies, if they're planning to have enemies. And certainly what I see in my work is that generally they plan all the major challenges they experience. So again, the between-life soul regression tells the client, why did you make these plans? And it allows people to see deeper meaning, whereas they may not have seen any previously.
Do they get a chance to see in the pre-life planning process how most probably their life will unfold?
They have a good sense of that, but very little is written in stone. What I mean by that, let me give an example. One of the mediums I worked with for Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift, when she goes into people's pre-birth planning sessions, she reports that she sees something, and this is what Spirit is showing her, something that looks like an incredibly vast, intricate, and elaborate flowchart. Well, what is a flowchart? It's a series of decision points. If you do A, then X happens. If you do B, then Y happens. The flowchart she sees, which represents the person's life plan, is so vast and elaborate as to be beyond human comprehension. What that flowchart represents is the plan that was created at the soul level before they came into body, and those decision points take into account the possible free will decisions that the person is going to make. So what actually happens is determined by the intersection, the interplay between your use of your free will and the basic parameters, the options that are set up before you're born.
Do they know what you'll probably do? Do the spirits know what the decisions you'll probably make?
They have a good sense of that, which is based upon what you've done in past lives, and the habits that you have. People have habitual tendencies, habitual patterns of responding to certain challenges in certain ways. Some people respond by avoidance. Some people respond to pleasurable experiences through grasping. They try to grasp the joy and hold on to it and not let go of it. And there are many such patterns that develop over an arc of lifetimes. So based upon what the spirit guides see in the Akashic record, the arc of lifetimes that has already been previously lived, they do have a pretty good sense. But again, very little is actually written in stone, and people do make less probable decisions all the time.
Can we change our pre-life plan during life?
Not only can you, but almost everybody does. And the most common way in which this happens is through consultation with your guides and the other significant people in your life in the dream state while you're asleep. In other words, you leave the body and you travel in what is referred to as light body, the spirit body, back to the non-physical realm during a portion of the time that you're asleep. And during that time, you meet with your guides, you meet with the other significant people in your life, you review your pre-birth intentions, you talk about whether or not you're fulfilling them, and if you feel that you're not fulfilling them, or that perhaps you no longer want to, maybe the intentions have now changed, then you revise the plan in consultation with your guides and the other people in your life. Happens all the time.
When they lay out your original plan in the flowchart. As you say, there's a lot of different options and probabilities and decisions along the line. Would those decisions, when you go and change your plan, is it different from those decisions completely? In other words, totally different from your flowchart?
It could be. That would be relatively unlikely because, as I mentioned, the pre-birth planning is so vast, so comprehensive, that it takes into account pretty much everything that might happen. But occasionally it does happen that you basically want to toss out the pre-life script and do something completely different. And a person can do that if they want to. There are also, I should mention, other ways to modify the pre-birth plan. One of them is that you can simply speak out loud to your higher self, your soul, and or your guides, or you can just speak silently in your mind. Talk with them, tell them that perhaps you feel you've taken on a bit too much, or you want to make this change or that change. And those requests are heard, and very often they're honored. Now, if it's not actually for your highest good, or the highest good of all beings, to make the request to change, then it won't happen. And very often people don't really have any way of knowing in their conscious mind whether or not what they're requesting is for the highest good of all beings. So the best way to make the request is to state it and then say, thank you for this or something better. And the or something better gives spirit permission to create something truly better for the good of all beings.
Yeah. When we go through things like a divorce, is that usually planned?
Very often it is, but not all the time. Based upon the research I've done, I would guess probably maybe 70% of the time, maybe as much as 80%. But you still see there's a significant percentage there that allows for free will decisions after one has come into body. Let me give a hypothetical example that I think will make all of this more clear. Let's say that there is a soul who's had many lifetimes in which the soul made certain plans before coming into body, but then when the soul got here, the soul deferred to the wishes of others. This is somebody who let other people tell them how to live their life. Not an uncommon thing to do. So let's arbitrarily call this soul Sally, no sexism intended. When Sally has her life review at the end of those particular lifetimes, she will see that she had this tendency to defer to the wishes of others, and most likely she will resolve to carry it back into body energetically, not for the purpose of expressing it again, but rather for the purpose of healing it, for the purpose of learning to stand up for herself. So she makes that plan. Now let's say there's another soul in the soul group, and I'll arbitrarily call this soul Dave. Dave has had a number of past lives in which he used power inappropriately over others, told others how to live their lives. And again, no sexism intended. When Dave has his life review, he sees that he has this tendency, and like Sally, he resolves to carry it back into body energetically, not for the purpose of expressing it, but for the purpose of healing it, for the purpose of learning to respect the wishes of others. Since they're in the same soul group, Sally knows about Dave's pre-birth plan. So she goes to him before either one of them is born, and she says something like the following. She says, Dave, I am planning to take back into body my tendency to defer to the wishes of others for the purpose of healing it. I see that you are planning to take into body the opposite tendency, the tendency to dominate others, also for the purpose of healing it. Why don't you and I create a pre-birth plan that we will marry around the age of 30? And although we know that this is likely to be a turbulent marriage, our hope is that I'll learn to stand up for myself and you'll learn to respect the wishes of others. Dave says, this is a great idea. Let's do it. So that's their plan. Now, let's say that when Sally is 25, she gets a job with an employer who is treating her with a profound lack of respect and kindness. Let's also say that she marshals her internal resources and she takes a stand. She says, stop. If you want me to continue working here, you must treat me with respect and kindness. In the moment she takes a stand like that, there's a tremendous increase in her frequency, her vibration. If she can sustain the heightened vibration until she's 30, now one of two things is likely to happen. Either she and Dave never meet, because her frequency is much higher than his, and by virtue of the law of attraction, they're never brought together. Or if they do meet, they have one date and then nothing comes of it, again, because their frequencies are so dissimilar. So in this hypothetical, Sally has used her free will to learn the plan lesson, standing up for herself, which in turn obviates the need for the plan challenge, the difficult marriage. And so the difficult marriage simply never happens. This is the kind of thing that is represented in the flowchart that I just described. Now, some of your listeners are probably going to say, well, what about Dave? Doesn't he still have to learn to respect the wishes of others? The answer is yes, but it doesn't have to be through that marriage to Sally. He will now magnetize to himself another relationship that gives him the opportunity to do that, or some other set of circumstances in which that kind of lesson can be learned. So you see in the example, there's a very intricate intersection between free will and the pre-birth plan.
Yeah. How about things like abortions? You know, when the life really doesn't get started. Is that generally planned in advance?
It is planned and with the consent of all involved. There's an entire chapter in Your Soul's Gift about, most of it is about miscarriage, but there's a specific channeling at the end of it that it speaks about abortion. And what we learn is that this is, if this happens, it's with the consent of the higher selves of all involved, including the consent of the soul of the fetus. So nothing is happening that is a violation of anyone's free will.
Okay. Handicaps? How about handicaps? You know, kids are born or develop them very early age. Are those all planned?
I wouldn't say that all are planned, but there's a great story about that in Your Soul's Plan, the first book. There's a chapter on blindness and deafness, and the blindness story is a gentleman named Bob, who actually does not plan prior to birth to be blind, but when he's born premature, and the nurse at the hospital places him in an incubator, and she accidentally set the oxygen level too high, which damaged the retinas in his eyes and caused blindness. When this happened, his guides essentially pulled his spirit out of the infant body, took him back to the other side. They actually showed him images of the retinas being damaged. They said, if you continue with the lifetime, you will be completely blind. And then what ensues is this fascinating dialogue in which he works out the details of the blindness. And he decides this will serve him. It will be the kind of challenge that allows him to grow in the ways he wants to grow. They bring into the discussion the person who had planned to be his romantic partner, his wife, later in that lifetime. She now opts out. She says, well, if you're now going in this direction, I don't feel that being married to a blind person is going to serve me. Won't allow me to grow in the ways I want to. So she backs out. But he decides to continue on this path because he feels that he can work with it to serve his pre-birth intentions. The one situation in which all handicaps are planned is, and this is the only exception I've ever seen to that, the blindness story, is with a handicap that occurs right at birth, as soon as the baby is delivered. If a child is born with a handicap, as far as I know, that has always been chosen beforehand. And the reason it has to be chosen beforehand is that it can't be reversed. And you would know before coming into body if you were being born into an historical time period in which medical science would allow the handicap to be treated. So if you're born into a time period in which it can't be treated, that's something that is chosen prior to incarnation.
Now you talk about time periods, which I find absolutely fascinating. Well, And you say how time is not linear. It's linear for us when we're here. But time from the spiritual perspective is not linear, which means that we can be born into the future and we can be born into the past, or, of course, we can be born into the present. How does that work?
You could think of it this way. When the soul is planning a lifetime, it's as though the soul opens an infinitely long history book. So the book goes all the way back to infinitely to previous times, and infinitely forward to what we would call future times. So the soul is flipping through the pages of this metaphorical book, looking for the ideal set of circumstances, the best historical time period, in which to have whatever sort of experience is being sought. And when the soul finds it, it says, okay, this is the time period that will best serve my pre-birth intentions. And then the soul brings in the other members of the soul group, and if they choose to share a lifetime with that particular soul, they will all end up incarnating in that historical time period.
But that historical time period has already passed. At least we think it has. Where do they go?
Well, these historical time periods, and I say historical in quotes, they still exist. So it's only finished from the perspective of the human being. That is the perspective of the limitations of the five senses. But in the quantum field, so to speak, all of these historical time periods still exist, and all of the lifetimes are actually happening concurrently from the perspective of the soul. Think of it this way. Let's say that you have a CD that has seven songs on it, and each song represents one lifetime. When you listen to the music on the CD as a human being, because of the limitations of the five senses, you can only listen to one song at a time. But your soul has no such limitations. So it's as though the soul is listening to all the songs or all the lifetimes at one moment, the present moment.
That's a hard one to get your head around. I like your example, but it's truly a challenging thought. It's going to take a while to digest something like that.
You know, I'm not sure that the human brain is wired in a way that actually allows us to fully understand the non-linearity of time, the simultaneity of time, unless somebody actually has a mystical experience that more or less bypasses the physical brain. If you've had that experience, then you understand the simultaneity of all time. But short of that, it's a concept that I think really is beyond the human brain.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Let's talk about personality. How does the soul and the personality relate or differ to each other? I mean, what's the difference between our soul and our personality?
I think of the soul as what you could call a spark of God. And I think of the personality as a spark of the soul. In other words, the soul is a vast, multidimensional, energetic being. And when an incarnation is created, the soul places a portion of its energy into a physical body. The specific percentage of its energy that it puts in the body varies depending upon what the objectives are for the lifetime, but it is just a portion of the overall energy. Now, as I understand it, souls have essential core characters. And this is a little bit beyond my area of expertise.
Characters or characteristics? You mean characteristics?
Characteristics, sorry.
Okay.
This is a bit beyond my area of expertise, but I would refer your listeners to something known as the Michael system. This refers not to Archangel Michael, but rather a group consciousness that uses the name Michael. And if they Google it, they'll find it. Michael talks about souls falling into different groups. So there are souls that are priests. That's the term Michael uses. There are others that are kings. There are others that I believe warrior is a category. And there are several other categories. That's the essential characteristic of the soul.
Kind of archetypes type of thing.
Archetypes, exactly. So, for example, I'm in the priest category, which is probably not surprising given the kind of work I'm doing in this lifetime. And I've had a number of other lives in which I was a monk or a priest or doing something of a similar nature. So that essential archetype carries throughout the lifetimes. But wrapped around it is the personality in any individual lifetime. And the personality varies considerably depending upon who the parents are, education, all sorts of societal influences, the historical time period. So there's wide variation in the personality that's wrapped around the archetype.
Okay, so the soul might have, does the soul have an archetype, or is the personality just the one that has the archetype?
It's the soul that has the archetype. So the soul's archetype would be priest, king, warrior, whatever it might be.
Okay. Now, when the soul decides to create a personality, it looks at what it wants to accomplish, and it decides, okay, this is the type of life I'm gonna want to lead. So it chooses which parts of its energies it can infuse into that personality. Is that how it works?
That's essentially how it works. It's choosing overall how much, the quantity of its energy it's going to put into the body. And it's also choosing to carry forward or not carry forward certain tendencies. For example, in the story that I just shared where the person had a number of lives deferring to the wishes of others or dominating others, the soul would decide, in this next incarnation, I would like to carry forward or not carry forward these kinds of tendencies for the purpose of healing them. That's essentially how it works.
Right. So if you put too much, say you had a certain negative energy, if you put too much of that energy into any given personality under the circumstances that it's going to live, then it might not be able to learn the lessons because it would make other decisions, maybe.
That's true. And not only might the personality make other decisions, but if the energy were too overwhelmingly negative, the person might actually choose suicide. And that is what happened to the person who is featured in the suicide chapter of Your Soul's Gift, my second book. What happened there, his name is Cameron. Cameron had a number of experiences in past lives that led to depression, anxiety, and so forth. And those past lifetimes ended without there being any healing. So that energy still exists, and it's part of Cameron's soul. It needs to be healed. Before he came into body, Cameron chose to bring in a tremendous amount of this so-called negative energy for the purpose of healing it. And he actually knew pre-birth that it would lead to so much depression and anxiety in this lifetime that he was highly likely to end up suiciding. Now, you might ask, well, why would anybody choose to do it that way? It's important to understand that from the soul's perspective, no matter what happens in a lifetime, there's no judgment, and it's never viewed as a failure. The soul might view it as incomplete learning and say, okay, this lesson needs to continue in a subsequent lifetime. But there's no judgment around that. It's not viewed as a failure. Every lifetime is viewed as a beautiful and incredible opportunity for healing and growth and learning. And if something isn't completed, quote-unquote, successfully from the perspective of the personality, the soul just says, all right, we'll continue working on that in another lifetime.
Okay. So we are an aspect of our soul. We're a piece of it, but we're really the same thing. So when we die, we go back to the to our soul, our personality goes back and gets blended into the soul? How does that work? Do we take our lessons that we learned and the various energies that we have either gotten rid of or accumulated? I guess we could get more negative energies. And that goes back into the soul?
It becomes part of the soul. The growth and learning, the progress that is made, that becomes part of the soul for all eternity. If negative energies are created, my understanding is that those actually stay on the earth plane. They don't go back to the non-physical realm with the personality, and actually can't, because the non-physical realm is at a higher frequency, and the lower frequency emotions like depression, anxiety, anger, lack of forgiveness, and so forth, those sorts of energies actually cannot go back to that higher frequency. So they linger on the earth plane. The person who created them is responsible for resolving them. And so when you come back into body, it's
the
actually
person,
the
being
DNA.
The personality or the soul?
You could say both in this case, because the personality will be coming back to resolve those energies. But again, the personality is a part of the soul. So the soul is very much aware of those energies that were created, and the soul very much wants the personality to resolve them. So it's actually, as I understand it, the DNA that picks up those negative energies that continue to linger on the earth plane, and then the person sets about in the new lifetime attempting to heal or resolve them.
But the DNA goes through the physical body, so you'd have to incarnate into a physical lifeline, wouldn't you?
That's one way to do it. You can also learn lessons in non-physical lifetimes. As I understand it, we've all had many, many of those, and we have them at the same time as we're having the physical lifetimes. But that's beyond the scope of the work that I do. I'm looking strictly at the pre-birth plans of people who are incarnating on Earth at this time.
Okay. Can a soul have more than one personality on incarnated at any one time?
It can. My understanding is that that's quite unusual, but that it does happen occasionally. When it happens, perhaps the most common reason for that is that the soul wants to have a particularly large energetic impact on the earth. And so what the soul will then do is have two or possibly even more incarnate personalities at the same time and station them in very, very different places around the globe as a way of maximizing the energetic impact on the earth. That's essentially how that works.
You would never really run into another personality when you were on the earth that from the same soul.
As far as I know, that does not happen.
Yeah. Now, you said in your book, you said, and I'm quoting you, hopefully accurately, "I suddenly had an overwhelming feeling of love for everyone," unquote. What was that all about? You remember
the experience that?
That
I do, it's unforgettable. The experience you're talking about occurred just a few weeks after the session with the medium that I talked about at the beginning of the show. And what happened was I was in my apartment, living in Evanston, Illinois at that time. I was doing the marketing and communications work that I described, decided to take a break from work and go for a walk. So I was doing nothing more glamorous than literally walking down the sidewalk. And suddenly I was overcome with this feeling of overwhelming unconditional love for every person I saw. And I remember this very clearly because the first person I saw was a cab driver. He was sitting behind the wheel of his cab waiting for a fare to come along. I looked at this man who was a total stranger to me and felt pure unconditional love for him. And then I looked up and I saw a man's barber shop on the corner. I looked through the window and I saw the barber cutting a client's hair. Again, two total strangers, but as I looked at them, this feeling of overwhelming unconditional love was present. And then I turned around and I saw a young woman, a mother, pushing an infant in a stroller down the sidewalk. And again, that feeling of pure unconditional love was there. Every time I saw another person, I felt this unconditional love. And when I say unconditional love in this context, I'm not talking about the kind of love you might feel for a parent or a child or a romantic partner. This was truly a transcendent experience. It was an experience of divine love. Now, I understood immediately and intuitively what was happening, which was, I was in some form of enhanced communion with my own soul. In other words, it's as though my soul were saying to me, this love is who you really are. This is your true nature. And I believe that my soul gifted me with that experience that day. Because later, when I went on to research people's pre-birth plans for your soul's plan and your soul's gift, every single pre-birth plan I looked at was always based on great wisdom and unconditional love. And this was true even when a quote-unquote negative role or negative experience was being planned for the person. It was always based on great unconditional love and wisdom. So if I had not had that experience of myself, my soul, as unconditional love, I would have still found that same result in my research. But I think there would always have been this little voice at the back of my head saying, how do you know this is true? How do you know the pre-birth plan is based on unconditional love? Well, I know it's true because that was my experience that day. I had an experience of myself, my soul, as unconditional love. And this is why I can say to your listeners with complete confidence and certainty that I believe that we as souls are made literally from the energy of unconditional love, because that was my experience walking down the street that day.
Has it ever reoccurred?
You know, something similar but a bit different happened several years later. It was on Christmas Eve, which at the time did not have any particular significance to me because I was raised in a Jewish family. I was with my father and sister. We were on vacation. We were on a cruise. We were sitting in the dining hall waiting for dinner. And suddenly I felt this great, great unconditional love, which was somewhat similar to what I had felt before, but it was different. And the difference was that I knew it was the presence of Jesus. I can't tell you how I knew, but I knew. And at that time, again, in that time in my life, Christmas, Jesus had no particular significance to me whatsoever. It does now. But at that time, it didn't. But I knew that it was the presence of Jesus that I was feeling, and I just basked in it for as long as it lasted.
Yeah. How long did the first experience last?
That lasted about an hour.
Did it? Okay. Spirit guides. Are spirit guides basically souls, or are they personalities, do you think?
Well, they're personalities, but, you know, when we talk about is it being a personality or a soul, it's important to understand, in a sense, that's actually an arbitrary and incorrect distinction. We have to use that kind of language because otherwise it's not clear what we're talking about. But in the ultimate sense, the personality is the soul. The personality has access to all of the wisdom, all of the love of the soul. And essentially, bottom line, what we're trying to do here is bring into body and express the full love of our higher selves. But coming back to your question about guides can be, and sometimes are, friends or family members who have passed on before us and who then choose to guide us from the non-physical realm. Or very often the guides are more advanced. They may even be done incarnating on Earth. Many of them are. But generally, they've had many, many lifetimes, so they're extremely wise, and that equips them to guide us as we go through experiences similar to the ones that they once went through.
How do they guide us? How do they help us during a lifetime?
They are actually in a couple of ways. One is that they frequently talk to you. Not in the sense that you would hear a voice, although some people like mediums do, but we could say they're whispering in your ear, so to speak. And for the average person, it doesn't register as an audible voice. It comes through in the form of an idea, which most of us think is our own brilliant idea. And then we follow through with it. Things work out well. We take credit for having come up with this brilliant idea, but it was actually a guide whispering the idea into our consciousness. Another thing that the guides do quite often is that they take steps to help us fulfill our pre-birth intentions. So sometimes, if the personality uses free will to go in a direction that truly is not for the person's highest good, the guides will take steps to block them. So if you find the doors closing in mysterious ways and you think, you know, it shouldn't be this difficult, why can't I seem to go in this direction? It may be that it's not for your highest good to go in that direction and your guides are blocking you. By the same token, they can, quote-unquote, open doors for you when you're moving in a direction that is for the highest good. And when I say highest good, I mean not just the person's highest good, but the highest good of all beings. When you dedicate yourself to the service of all beings, then doors start to miraculously open. And that's because the guides are hard at work making that happen.
How do angels fit in on this? And what's the difference between an angel and a guide?
My understanding is that angels don't incarnate and live physical lifetimes. They do occasionally come into body briefly in order to do something in the physical realm, but they aren't incarnating and having lifetimes, per se, the way that we are. Guides, as I understand it, either still are incarnating or they've had many incarnations and are finished with the cycle of incarnation. That's the basic difference.
How could you learn if you don't incarnate? Do we incarnate so that we can learn faster, or do we incarnate so that we can learn at all? Are there certain things that you have to incarnate to learn, or can we learn these things other ways?
Most things can be learned in other ways, in non-physical lifetimes, in classes that we take on the other side. But we do learn them faster here because of the intensity of the physical experience and the intensity of the emotions that are generated here. It's basically through the intense emotions that are created by physical life that the learning and growth occurs. Having said that, there are certain things that can only be learned in a physical lifetime. The main one being separation. What do I mean by separation? I mean having the experience of perceiving yourself as a separate individual being. That's not our state of consciousness on the other side. The truth of the matter is that there's only one being in the universe. It's you, it's me, it's our guides. We're all individualized expressions of the one. And when we're back in the non-physical, we're in a state of oneness consciousness. But when you come into body, again, because of the limitations of the five senses, you perceive that you are a separate individual, separate from everyone else. Because you perceive yourself as separate, you end up experiencing things like anger, depression, anxiety, and a whole host of other emotions that would not be generated if you were still in a state of oneness consciousness. So as difficult as that may be, it's a unique kind of learning opportunity.
I've heard that angels are, they don't get that involved with our our life planning, our specific plans. What they get involved with is the higher level of making things happen on the planet. Maybe bigger things, maybe larger things, or maybe specific things. Have you run into any of that?
That's my understanding as well. But having said that, as I understand it, every individual person has a guardian angel. And the guardian angel is there to do just what we think the guardian angel is there to do. And that is watch over us and essentially make sure that you continue to stay alive so that you can fulfill what you came here to do.
Yeah. Robert, it has been very, very interesting talking to you. We have pretty much run out of time. Could you, I know you mentioned it earlier, but why don't you tell the listeners exactly how they can get a hold of you and your website and so on and so forth. Robert Schwartz.
Sure. The website is yoursoulsplan.com. I would invite your listeners to sign up for the newsletter to receive articles and information about workshops and speaking engagements. Again, there are large excerpts from both of the books on the books pages of the website. And you can order Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift from Amazon, any bookstore. I often encourage people to ask their local libraries to order the books, because then when you're finished with them, they're available as a healing resource to others. And again, most of what I do these days is the between lives soul regression. That's explained in detail in the store at yoursoulsplan.com. It's the most powerful and most direct way to find out what you planned before you were born, how you're doing in terms of fulfilling the plan, and what else you need to do. And I would be honored to work with any of your listeners.
Thank you very much for being here. I really appreciated you. Robert Schwartz.
My pleasure, Dick.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.